Let's head to Australia. Our correspondent is Chris Nishi. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Catherine.
Look, let's begin with a couple of very big stories. We will come, of course, to the Bondi stabbings, awful events of a few days ago, but we've had a tremendous amount of coverage here, so we'll come back to that a little bit later as to the latest information there. But since then, the Bruce Lehrman verdict in the civil case, in the defamation case, the judge certainly had plenty to say. Just remind us of the background to this long-running story and also what happened to the criminal case, Chris.
Sure. Okay. It is important to go to the background here. This story started in 2021 when a parliamentary staffer, Brittany Higgins, alleged that she had been raped by her colleague Bruce Lehrman in Parliament House 2 years earlier, in late at night in a minister's office. That news was broken sensationally on a in an interview with Channel 10, and although Lehrman wasn't named, his name soon came out, and then there was a criminal trial, but the criminal trial was cancelled firstly because of juror misbehaviour. One of the jurors, I think, Googled some aspects of the trial. And then there was a decision not to have a new trial because of concerns for Brittany Higgins' mental health. So that looked like that. But then fast forward a couple of years, and we now had a defamation case where Bruce Lehrman was arguing that in that Channel 10 interview, he had been identifiable. Although he wasn't named, he said it was clearly obvious to a lot of people that the person they were talking about, the alleged perpetrator, was him. So for the past few weeks, we have had this federal court defamation trial going on, which was really quite sensational. And finally, on Monday, we got a judgment. And the judge, Justice Lee, found that Lehrman had raped Brittany Higgins, and hence he lost the case. It's just important to note, however, that this was a civil case, so this was decided on the balance of probabilities. He found it was more likely than not that Bruce Lehrman had done this, not that he had done this beyond a reasonable doubt, as a jury would have been required to find. Nonetheless, it's a devastating verdict for Bruce Lehrman. He came to clear his name, possibly to pick up a bit of money as well, and failed. Justice Lee said when he set down his verdict, his decision, he said in relation to the criminal case followed by the defamation case, he said Bruce Lehrman had got out of the lion's den but then made the mistake of going back to collect his hat.
This judge had he's a jurist of a certain age. There are so many memorable lines. There's another point where he talked about the different reasons, I think, that Lehrman had given for being back at Parliament House at, what was it, about 3 a.m, and referenced a piece of work he needed to deliver in about a week and a half's time, and said, you know, he'd not previously displayed tendencies towards workaholism. There were so many memorable lines in this verdict, and all of them, yes, leading back to the same point, which is the judge suggesting it was not wise to have brought a civil case.
That's right, and it does look like a big mistake to have done that. The next thing in this case, this story is going to continue for quite a few months, if not years, but the next step in this case is the decision on costs. It's estimated that the total legal cost of this defamation action has been about $10 million, so about $5 million per side. Given Lehrman lost, and lost so comprehensively, it's likely that the judge will make a cost order against him. But then there's obviously the issue of, does he have $5 million to give to Channel 10 to pay its lawyer's bill? And the answer, of course, is no. But that's just another thing Lehrman will have to face in the next few weeks.
So where does this leave things now? Is there anything left in, you know, a formal institutional sense on this long-running situation?
Well, when the news broke a couple of years ago, it did lead to, I don't know if we could call it soul-searching, but a bit of thinking among politicians and people worked in Parliament House about appropriate standards of behaviour, the drinking and the sex culture. So there's been a bit of a focus on that. As far as there being any further action, there is more to come. Linda Reynolds, the minister who Higgins alleged took part in a political conspiracy to cover this up, is suing Higgins and her partner, David Shiraz, for defamation. Justice Lee found that there was no evidence of a political cover-up and that that had been fabricated by Higgins, and she was egged on by Channel 10 in that sensational media interview. That's going on. Bruce Lerman is facing more rape charges, a criminal case in Toowoomba that is due to be next in court in June. So he still has his own legal headaches. But as far as there being an institutional response specifically to this, no, at this stage there is not.
Now, another story that's in the news right now, we just heard some audio of it on our morning news program this morning, a right royal grilling at a Senate inquiry, so like a select committee inquiry, into the Woolworths boss and into whether there are excess profits being made. One particular measure that the politicians were very keen to use, the Woolies boss was not. And just tell us what unfolded.
Right. So Green Senator Nick McKim asked the Woolworths boss, Brad Banducci, what was their return on equity? And this is, return on equity is a profit measure that indicates how profitable a business is. Banducci said, at first declined to comment, and McKim pushed him, and he again declined to comment, saying he didn't know, at which point McKim sensationally threatened him with 6 months jail. He said by not answering this question, Banducci was in contempt of the Senate and could be jailed for 6 months. So quite sensational. He's been accused of grandstanding. But that is the way Senate inquiries tend to go now. They tend to bring up business people into a Senate inquiry and then grill them and get themselves on the front pages. As it happens, ironically, Woolworth's return on equity is not a secret figure. It's there in their annual report for anyone to see. So it was all a little pointless. The return on equity, if you're interested, is 26%, which is about 2.5 times the amount that banks earn. And that was the figure McKim was looking for. He wanted to be able to make the point that they are making massive, massive profits, much, much larger than the banks, who Australians all also like to dislike as being price gougers. But then there are arguments about whether return on equity is an appropriate measure and whether comparing to banks is appropriate as well. We next heard from the Coles boss, who revealed that their return on equity, she'd perhaps seen how Brad Banducci had been treated, so it was pretty quick to come up with that figure, revealed that their return on equity was 31%, which is obviously a pretty impressive figure and won't help the supermarkets make their argument that they are not price gouging, that they are not taking advantage of their position in the economy as an effective duopoly.
All right. That threat of going to prison, I take it that's not likely to happen. It was simply warning him the actual environment he was in and probably a bit of grandstanding.
Yeah, I think I cannot imagine that he would be jailed. It's a pretty given that the figure is well known, it's in their annual report. I can't imagine him digging his heels in and refusing to supply the figure. I would say Woolworths communications team and lawyers are probably writing a letter now containing that figure that they will send to the Senate committee. And so that'll disappear. But it's more, we've seen this trend of people like the bosses of PricewaterhouseCoopers after their tax advice scandal and Qantas after their hoarding customers' money from COVID refund scandal. We've seen lots of big business leaders hauled up before the Senate, and a lot of senators taking the chance to really give them a hard time and grill them. And in the process to increase their own profile and get themselves on the television news and the front page of the newspaper. So it's a bit of a new dynamic here that business people can no longer sort of be anonymous and tucked away in the business pages. They're often dragged onto the front pages if there's something that they've done that is unpopular.
Chris, just finally, let's just go back to the Bondi Junction stabbings. It's had a huge amount of coverage here since this awful event happened last weekend. Do we know any more about motive? I think the focus now is likely to come very much on mental health services and whether this person's fallen through the cracks. What's the latest discussion?
I think that's where it's going to go. As far as motive goes, no, there's no more. He did. The police have said he did target women for his victims for the most part. I think five of the six were women. But motive. But beyond that, we don't know anything about motive. So as you said, the focus will be on mental health. Is there enough support for people with mental health issues? This fellow was diagnosed as a schizophrenic at age 17. He had a psychiatrist. He was receiving treatment in Queensland, but left Queensland and stopped taking his medication and so fell through the cracks. So there are questions about how does the government deal with that? But then against that, we're not a police state. We don't put people under surveillance just because they have a mental health problem. The government has announced an $18 million coronial inquest into this. They're putting a lot of money into it to ensure that it can happen quickly and doesn't stop the coroner's other work, but also to ensure that there's enough mental health support for victims, families and witnesses and so on when they come to give evidence. So we're going to hear more about it. We're also likely to hear more from a fellow called Ben Cohen. I don't know if you caught up with his, well, lack of involvement in this. He was mistakenly identified as the attacker.
This is an awful very early story. On. Yeah, just carry on.
Very early on. Like within an hour, for some reason, and it's not clear why, his name was put online. Ben Cohen, a university student from Bondi, was the attacker. Cohen's obviously a Jewish name, so it was picked up by anti-Semitic tweeters and bloggers and so on, and really went viral all around the world. Now, that's bad enough, of course, but then Channel 7 picked up the name too and put his name in a broadcast, which it then posted on its website. So Channel 7's, a supposedly credible media outlet, having published the name, lent credibility to these wrong reports that this fellow was, that Ben Cohen was the attacker. He's now taking legal action against Channel 7, you won't be surprised to hear, in what is probably, in contrast to the Bruce Lerman trial, in what is probably going to be about the easiest defamation case ever, to be accused of murdering six people when you were actually not the murderer is really, about as defamatory as you can get, I think. So that should be a very quick case. I imagine Channel 7 will quickly be getting out the checkbook and writing a check and wanting this to go away as quickly as possible.
Chris, thank you. Chris Nishi, our correspondent in Australia.